Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the Investors Bank studio, Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan. Simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Tuesday morning. Once again, late last night, the New York Mets couldn't muster up any offense. Shut out in San Diego. The Yankees were home. They won. They beat up on the Mariners. Home runs all over the place. CC is good enough to get a win. They continue to roll. Luke Voit home runs. I mean, they're just cruising. But then later, the Mets don't get it done again offensively. It is 2018 all over again as they start to slip in the standings. No run support for Jacob deGrom. They got punked last night by Chris Paddock, who before the game is pissed off that he didn't win NL Rookie of the Month. So much so that he calls out Peter Alonso, says, yeah, he's a great player, but I'm coming for him tonight. We'll see who the big dog is. Alonso can't get a hit. He strikes out three times. Paddock strikes about twice. This guy's gesticulating on the mound all last night, fired up, staring into his dugout, showing up the Mets. This thing is getting out of control. And Boomer, I think there's only one thing to do. It's time to call Jessica Mendoza.
Well, she is on
it's time
the,
to get her involved.
Staff, right? You got to get her involved.
Time to get her,
in here because maybe she could actually manufacture a hit in a key spot, for God's sake.
Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Oh, you know, I've been better because I stayed up and watched this freaking dreck of an offensive team. And the futile, inept, pathetic, you name it, that's exactly where they are right now. And it is. I don't know what the analytics department is talking about because I guess after another just horrendous performance by the Met offense, just sitting there, swinging at high strikes, flailing at change-ups. This kid Paddock just owned them last night. And I just watching the game, I'm thinking, okay, Jake DeRom is pitching his ass off.
Yep.
Then he gives up the home run, and you're like, there it is. That's it. It's going to be 1-0. And ultimately, that was the game-winning hit, was the home run. But it was just, and you know, even Jake, I think it was in the third inning last night when there was a pop up between McNeil and Lagares, and the two guys out in the outfield, McNeil makes the play, and they start to run in as if it's three outs, and it's not; it's the second out. And you know, Jacob will never like embarrass his teammates or anything, but you could see that he was like pissed off. Like, what are you idiots doing?
Well, there's only one explanation for that. That's lack of focus.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where that really falls in the whole analytics department and how people determine whether or not, you know, guys are actually in the game, because there is a human element to every single game that somehow has gotten lost in baseball as we watch this. But, you know, the futility of the Mets offense, and I get it. You know, Mickey Callaway could honestly say, hey, look, we ran into a very good pitcher, a very hot pitcher, a pitcher that was throwing 98 miles an hour last night.
Been saying that for a week, though.
I know that, but like last night I could see that. But because it's coming on the back end of just this five-game stretch now, where when you go back to – I'm gonna take you back to the third game against the Reds. That was May 1st, May Day, okay? 1-0 loss. The next game, that was the 1-0 win with Syndergaard hitting the home run. Then a 3-1 loss. Then a 4-3 loss in 18 innings. Then a 3-2 loss, and that was like, you know, getaway day, give up day. Here's the sweep day for the Mets. And then the 4-0 loss last night. I mean, their offense is just horrific right now. I mean, horrific. And, you know, to Pete Alonso's, I guess credit. I mean, you know, Paddock was trying to get him involved last night by saying he's coming after Pete Alonso and all this. And I guess Paddock shows up to the stadium in all black with a cowboy hat. And you got the San Diego fans all into their rookie sensation. They're all wearing some people wearing cowboy hats and all that other stuff. As they term him the sheriff. So I'm glad to know that there's another dopey team and fan base out there that names their pitchers.
gives them nicknames.
Right.
Yeah. Alonso, you know, I thought other than at the plate,
he handled it fine,
but it's just extra frustrating where this guy Paddock, before the game, is now basically calling him out, calling out the Mets, saying, I'm going to show that I'm the big dog, and he goes out there and does it. I mean, he mowed them down last night. And Pete Alonso said, yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow. I think he handled it fine after the game. But he said, yeah, when someone calls you out like that, and then you go out there, you're 0-for, and you got 3 strikeouts, and you got men on base. When you're up, I mean, that's a big problem. So what is it now before this thing completely falls apart? What are the answers,
Brody?
What are the answers, Chili Davis? What are the answers, Mickey Callaway? Because this May is right now starting like the June did last year.
Well, it's like May did last year, dude.
Well, yeah, it started in May. It got really bad in June, and that knocked them completely out of it. So what is it? Because, you know, everybody talks about Keuchel and Kimbrel, those are the two guys out there. There's not a Keuchel and Kimbrel that swings a bat that's just hanging around out there. It's going to take more than trading for Wilmer Font to bolster your bullpen. What is it? What are you going to do? Because you got rid of one guy, as we said yesterday. You made the Travis d'Arnaud, he wasn't good enough, DFA. You got him out of there. Brody Van Wagenen now, if he believes his team is a National League East winner, then you better do something soon before you're completely out of it, because that's where they're trending.
So I'm showing you last year's first half schedule.
Yep.
May 1st. You want to go?
Oh, look at that. Loss, 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 loss. Win, loss, loss. Great.
That's, I think that's 9 out of 11. They started the month of May losing.
Unbelievable.
And it's almost like they are right trapped in the middle of it again. And this is the second quality start that Jacob deGrom gave you, where you are seeing exactly what we saw last year. So it is about as inept and as futile as it possibly can be. You know, and finally, you know, they sit Rosario down.
Yeah.
But they don't sit Rosario down because he's got a problem with the bat. They're sitting him down because he is a butcher at shortstop.
Yeah, he forgot how to play defense.
He has turned out to be a butcher at shortstop, and they're saying, look, you know, we need him to work on some things. And, you know, thankfully you're actually holding some people accountable. But it is frustrating, it's maddening, and they are right back where they were last year at this time. And you know what? Somebody's got to start being uncomfortable. You know, it can't be a country club. And I know that these managers, especially after this eye-opening interview that Terry Collins gave, I guess, on FS1 or whatever it was, where he is talking about how the manager just shows up now and the starting lineup is on his desk when he gets there.
Yeah, it's basically what he said. He said that the days of showing up at the ballpark in early in the morning, watching the tape from the night before, writing the lineup card, using all your information, and then making decisions for a manager, those days are over. Manager shows up now, all the information's on his desk, and he did say that the lineup is on his desk as well. Now, I don't know if that happens with the Mets currently. He was implying that it happened with him in his last couple years with the Mets, that the lineup was there. I mean, he wouldn't have said that if it didn't happen to him.
I don't know if that's Sandy Alderson doing that, or I don't even know if Brody Van Wagenen is actually doing that. And if Brody Van Wagenen was doing that. Now, we lauded Brody for what he had done with the analytics department, with the international scouting department and all that other stuff, and how he's expanded all of those areas of the team, because, you know, we sit here and the Yankees live by that as well. And we had Brian Cashman come on this radio station tell us last year that they were after Luke Voit. And the reason they were after Luke Voit is because their analytics department projected Luke Voit's swing angle and his ability to make contact and to play first base and to hit home runs in Yankee Stadium were all analytically, favorable for him to be the first baseman of the Yankees.
Yeah.
Now, he has smashed through all of those things, and he has delivered on an unbelievable number of huge hits in big games, where he has carried this team and given them a big bat in the lineup. So when the Yankees get it right, they get it right, and we kind of laud them for that. But when things are going south, as they are for the Mets, we hammer them for that.
Yeah, but every team follows the same analytical program for the most part. It's just who's better at it. And by the way, you know, analytics be damned with that Robinson Cano deal. For the most part, right? Was that an analytically driven deal? No, that was basically Brody Van Wagenen saying, all right, that's one of my clients. We need to improve the bullpen. We'll take on all that money with Robinson Cano, get in Edwin Diaz, and we'll end up doing that. I mean, that's
you also have to remember they got rid of the Bruce contract and they got rid of the
Sure, but they still took
contract.
On a ton of money and gave up big prospects, which is what we were screaming, either one of the two. You don't give up big prospects and take on a bunch of money, and that's exactly what they did.
Especially when Robinson Cano's not doing very well, is he, Anthony?
Now, you know what, guys? I'm extremely frustrated with the entire lineup, but if you want to give somebody a pass, you say McNeil and Alonso, although they're performing, they're still young guys. And the whole narrative is when you got Cano is, you know, he's a professional hitter. He'll hit for at least the first two seasons of the contract. Then you deal with it at the end. This guy's batting less than .240, and I think this is the gaping hole in the lineup. You can't have him batting third every night and continue to put up zero runs. I mean, something's got to change, and honestly, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to point to him getting hit in the hands a couple of times. I don't know how much he's affected by that. If he's affected a lot by that, then he shouldn't be playing. Then he should be on the injured list and dealing with those hands healing. But to me, I still believe Robinson Cano, when it's said and done, is going to have a good offensive year. The problem is right now, he's stuck in the middle of a lineup, and he's looked lost, and he's looked nothing like himself. And when you've got a dearth of big power bats in your lineup, and the guy that you acquired, who was supposed to be, as the caller said, really good, at least really good this year and next year, he's doing nothing. He's got an OPS under 700 and he's hitting .240 and he looks lost at the plate. Yeah, that's a big problem. Well, and it's the general manager's signature acquisition in the offseason too. That is another big problem. Now,
I would also tell you that Michael Conforto is like a black hole right now. You know, he's another one that I think he's had like, what, four hits in the last 10 games or something?
Yeah, he has been grinding to a screeching halt. Couple of strikeouts again last night, too. I mean, he was one of those guys in the beginning of the year that you were saying, all right, you lump him in with the young bats, that this is why it's going to be sustainable, because it's Conforto, because it's Alonso, because it's McNeil, and it hasn't continued. It hasn't been sustainable. So, I mean, they are just, this is the worst type of stuff to watch. And because we've been through it, too, I mean, it's even more frustrating. I remember when the Mets, like, when they were hitting and not pitching, I said I'd rather have it this way. I really would, because I feel like the pitching would come around. And now,
the pitching did come around.
Right. And I said, what I don't want is what we had last year, when you got some good pitching and then you weren't able to hit, because that's the most frustrating thing on earth. And here we are again.
And the amazing thing is that the Yankees just keep churning along. They just, whether it be Voit, whether it be Gardner, and then, of course, last night Estrada hits home run.
I mean,
it's just unbelievable. It really is. I mean, I always think that there's like a certain culture about certain franchises and teams. Now, certainly since George Steinbrenner took over and Brian Cashman's been involved, they've had a culture of winning. You know, they haven't won all these World Series and all this other stuff, but they win, you know, and they win despite all the injuries. They, you know, and look, they're still losing players.
Yeah, I know. James Paxton, I mean, we barely talked about that yesterday.
But there is a culture of winning, though, and I don't, and there's expectations, you know, they're like, I don't know what it is about us, I guess we tend to lament the fact that we're Met fans and we lose and we have these lousy like streaks, and these streaks go on and we can see them unfolding in front of our eyes.
And you can't blame anybody. And I know Brody Van Wagenen's big call to action when he got this job was a more positive thought process, and that fan base has been negative and that has permeated to the players and everybody in the building. I'm sorry, when you see this so much, and I know it wasn't that long ago that they had some success, but the problem is 17 and 18 were so bad. We're so bad. And now when you start to see the same trends with different players too, I mean, some of the same guys are here, but there's still different players on this team, then of course you're going to think the same thing is going to happen. So all this stuff that he said, I mean, everybody's going to call bullcrap on it. I mean, this is a guy, we're going to wake up in the morning and we're going to want to win championships every day and positive attitude this and positive attitude that, and we're bringing in a sleep consultant and all this stuff. It's the same stuff. The same thing is happening. So now he has to prove to us that we're wrong. because we're not just going to take your word for it. You have to show us with this team that you built and all this hot air that you spewed at us that things are going to be different. Because right now, I can't tell the difference. Nobody can. I can't tell the difference. You replaced a couple of guys. It's the same damn team. And by the way, if Terry Collins is right, and there's a stack of papers that are on Mickey Callaway's desk about who he's supposed to play and how he's supposed to be a manager, then what's the point of even firing him? It won't matter. It doesn't matter. Because he doesn't make any decisions anyway. So if Brody Van Wagenen wants to go that route, then he'll just put another guy in there who reads the same papers and gets the same lineup from upstairs.
The only thing is that, Mickey wasn't hired by Brody. That never bodes well for a coach, never bodes well for a manager. You know, the general manager always wants to seem to have his guy in there. But I think one of the reasons why Mickey got the job is that he was going to be sensitive to the analytics part of the job, and that he would be willing to take the analytics, the numbers, and the batting order and who's playing, who's not playing, and the analytics says this guy needs off after hitting two home runs. You know, these are the things that I would think would just basically drive the manager crazy. Like, you have to embrace the numbers, yes, but you also have to, you know, play like a little bit of a field game, right? Like all old baseball people will tell you that, you know, if a guy's on a hot streak and he's feeling good, man, don't take him out of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that drives, especially the old-time baseball guys, crazy, and
it drives
fans,
me
too.
Crazy,
I mean,
sure.
it's just unbelievable. But this is one I tend to agree with wholeheartedly. I can't stand it. When a guy is on a tear just because the numbers say that he might need a day off or he's not good against this guy, you don't take him out of the lineup.
Yeah, but
there are
do,
such things as
do.
Hot streaks. There are. They exist. It happens. Ask any athlete. Ask you. Sometimes you feel different. Sometimes you just feel better. Sometimes you're on a little bit of a positive run. You don't take that guy out of the lineup.
Some games you throw for 522 and another game you throw for 122.
Yep.
And sometimes it feels like the other team is better prepared for whatever you're trying to do, and they seem to always be in the right place at the right time, or there's somebody hanging around your neck, right? And then there are those games where they can't seem to get out of their own way. You call the right play almost every single time, and there's a guy running wide open.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the interaction of the players, who's hurt, who's not playing well. You know, do the coaches and their systems match up? Don't they match up? And this goes for every game, by the way. You know, like I was talking about the Yankees and how they win. Right, it just seems like they have this winning culture that has gone on and on and on and on and on. Now, they don't always win a world championship or a World Series, but they win. It's the same thing like the Boston Bruins, for God's sake. They have the same type of culture. And then when you look at the Boston Celtics, who are now down 3-1, the Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, you see like a little bit of infighting, a little jealousy. You see like guys not happy, guys a little bit, now all of a sudden we're at the top of the game and We got to have a better performance. And all of a sudden, Kyrie Irving is like disappearing.
Yeah, well,
and he's like in a slump. He's like in the worst slump of his playoff career.
Yeah,
and
you know,
those fans up there are not going to be kind to people. They were booing the freaking Celtics. The Celtics of all teams were being booed yesterday. They are about a hair of getting blown out of this series with Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks. And you're going to have – now, here's the thing. And I've been talking about Kyrie Irving coming to New York, thinking that he wants to come to New York. Talking about cultures, and we're talking about, you know, winning and happiness. And how many people have said that Kyrie Irving just looks totally unhappy all the time?
Well, he does. I mean, it's not – people are just saying what they see. He always looks pissed off.
So let me ask you, do you think that he is the right guy to be the leader of your franchise with your young group of players – with the Zion Williamson, hopefully, or whoever the number one or two or three draft pick is, and if you're able to pry Kevin Durant, is he the right guy to be paired with Kevin Durant?
If Zion,
after watching all of this and knowing what's gone on with Kyrie leaving Cleveland and all this other stuff.
Yeah, if the pick is Zion Williamson, then yes. If the pick ends up being Ja Morant, then no, I'm not even going near him. But if you got Zion, Durant, and Kyrie, I'm not worried about Kyrie's personality. I'm worried about his knee.
All right,
That's the thing I'm worried about.
So one other thing to quickly ask you. So do you think that with the way that we kind of follow the NBA and we follow the players, we follow Kevin Durant, we see him talking to Kyrie Irving when they were playing against each other, when they were at the All-Star game and covering their mouths.
Sure.
Do you think Kevin Durant says, you know, I'll come to New York if Kyrie is coming to New York?
Yeah, well, he's going to need another guy, but whether it's Kyrie or Kawhi or Jimmy Butler. He's going to need another guy.
Do you think that Durant and Irving have already spoken about this and that this is their dream to come to New York together?
I mean, I don't know if it's their dream. I think it's a possibility. I think that it's a possibility with those two teaming up, sure.
What I'm asking you is if Durant says to you,
yes,
the only way I'm coming to New York is if you sign Kyrie Irving.
Okay.
You're doing it.
Of course.
Okay.
All right. Who the hell wouldn't do that? What type of question is that? Come on.
Even if you had the number two pick and it's Ja Morant.
Well, at that point, then I think I'd do your plan and then try to get Anthony Davis with that number two
pick.
Thank
you very much.
All right. Boomer and Geo on the Fan CBS Sports Network. We somehow ended up on the Celtics.
I was just talking about like franchise cultures. Like the Yankees have this winning culture, right? They could bring up Domingo Germán. They could throw out Luis Severino. They could throw out CC Sabathia. They're going to win.
Yep.
Right?
Pretty incredible.
Hats off to those guys.
It's
amazing what they're doing.
It really is.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.